Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to another Tech Talk, our place where blind and partially sighted people can come together and share what we've learned about the world of technology. If you found something that you find particularly helpful or particularly unhelpful, we're really keen to hear about it. So do drop us a line. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes, traditional emails, all very welcome. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing from Chris Millington, who is the CEO of Emporia. And Chris will be telling us about their range of accessible smartphones and tablets. Colin Shales from RNIB's Technology for Life team will be along to talk about some of the options we have now for making mobile payments. And I'll be catching up with our friends at Dolphin Computer Access about what's new with the company. So stick around, it's another Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Tasnee Marshad, Callum Stoneman.
Hello, good to be back.
Hello, yes, good to be back indeed.
So what's happening in the world of technology as far as you're concerned, Tasnee?
Well, I'm quite liking the little nifty portable device of, is it called a milestone? It's the mile something. I quite like the all the features it has to offer. And it just seems really, really interesting product, actually. And it's basically like an MP3 player with various different, you can connect it to the internet, and it's got an SD card in it for memory, podcasts, music, audio.
Oh, so it's kind of like the Victor Stream.
That's it.
Players,
yeah, similar
like an audiobook.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Yeah, it's like one of those, similar to the Victor Stream even.
Okay, excellent. And Callum Stoneman, what's new with you?
I feel like I've got a bit of a theme going on at the minute, and I don't mean to, but it's another AI one for me this week. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I've joined the waiting list for the new Microsoft Bing, the AI-powered Bing, powered by the same technology that's using ChatGPT. And I got an email just before we started recording this saying that I've been given access. So I'm going to be playing with that in the coming days.
Let us know how you get on. And if you want to hit record while you're doing that, feel free.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's Microsoft, so you'd hope that it's going to be... I mean, it is a beta, so we've got to give them a chance, but you'd hope that it'll be nice and accessible as well. So we'll see.
And if it's not, you can give them all of your dissertation feedback.
Yeah.
You know, when we started doing Tech Talk together, it's almost a year ago now, I promised myself that I was never going to talk about my last visit to the Apple store. Well, last Friday, I did just that. And because I wanted to get hands-on with the Apple Watch Ultra. This is their new kind of high-end, very rugged version of the Apple Watch. It's a bit too chunky for me. You know, the original Apple Watch is very sort of clean design, sort of smooth rounded edges. And I don't know, it just felt to me like there were lots of extra kind of plasticky bits stuck on the side. I want the functionality and the features that it offers, but I think it might be a little bit on the chunky side. Let us know what's new with you. If you've encountered any technology recently that's grabbed your attention, whether it's been a positive or less than positive experience, we'd love to hear about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasnee Marshad, Callum Stoneman, thanks very much. Now, as you know, as a regular listener, we're always interested and keen to learn more about devices that make technology more accessible for the widest number of people. Not everybody is comfortable with the latest and greatest smartphone. Not everybody is necessarily comfortable even with a touchscreen. Well, one company that is at the forefront of tackling this area is Emporia. And Chris, the managing director for the UK and Ireland, joins us now. Welcome to Tech Talk, Chris. Just tell us a little bit about the mission of Emporia.
Hi, Dave. Thanks very much for having me. So Emporia is now 30 years old, just coming up to its 31st anniversary. and launched its first mobile phone for our target audience, and I'll explain that in a little bit, just under 20 years ago. So we've been doing this for quite some time. Our mission, our goal is to make digital technology accessible and inclusive for an older generation. So we focus entirely on the needs and requirements of people who are 65 plus. Now, when you start looking in that direction, what it then leads you to is looking at the difficulties that some people can face, and that can be anything from hearing and dexterity all the way through to sight, of course. So you then make adjustments and focus on usability and do loads of studies with lots of organizations like universities around the world to give you the kind of information that you need to get better and better and better to make this technology a much more accessible proposition. So really our mission statement is that we are there to help and digitize a forgotten generation.
And you are obviously trying to be inclusive. It's not just about blind and partially sighted people who are kind of audience, but people, as you say, they're older people, perhaps people with dexterity difficulties, maybe people with cognitive difficulties, hearing loss, a whole range. That must be quite challenging, Chris.
Yeah, but it's also extremely interesting and really enjoyable to do. So I've been doing this for almost 20 years of my life. And I can't get away from it because I feel like I've never quite finished what I want to achieve in the mission. I really enjoy it. I love working with charity organisations like yourselves that are able to then communicate this out to a wider audience and really working on unique product propositions. So like the Talk Active that you're going to review, you know, that product is entirely built for and with the RNIB.
You will be aware, obviously, rarely does a week go by when somebody somewhere doesn't put out a press release saying how they've solved a problem for you know, blind and partially sighted people, and their solution often is an app that runs on a smartphone. And as you know, the smartphones don't work for everybody. I think there is this almost unspoken assumption around the place that sometimes everybody's comfortable using a touchscreen smartphone, and that's not always the case.
No, absolutely. You know, if I just look at the over 65 audience, there are only 36% of people over 65 actually own a smartphone in the UK, which is quite an astonishing number. There is a resistance to technology as we age, not because we don't see the value of it or the benefit of it, but we don't use it as much as we would when we were younger, because hopefully we're retired in our later 60s. And when you use something less, it's very easy to forget how the functions work and where all the functions are in a device because of this lack of use. You know, on average, before retirement, you're using a device about three and a half hours a day. And after retirement, it's about 30 minutes a day. And repetitive behavior, repetitive use is the way that we learn as a human being. So when that drops away and you use functions less, it's very easy to get frustrated and confused where things are. And then, of course, you get the classic where software is updated and then everything changes. And why should it? Why should everything change? When you've just learned it one way, why have you got to learn it another way? So we address lots of those things in smartphones. But we also, of course, focus on button phones still. And they're very, very important to a user group that simply can't use touch technology.
Just if you could then, Chris, just give us a little bit of a whistle stop tour of your product range, just so that listeners have a feel for what's available from Emporia.
Yeah, it's very diverse. So, and you'll see that in the selections that have been put into the shop for RNIB. So we have a basic button phone called the Emporia Simplicity. We say it's a basic phone because it doesn't have cameras. It doesn't have lots of functions that are hidden away, like MP3 players and all the stuff that generally comes on a phone. We spend our time taking those things out and simplifying. We've concentrated very heavily on the buttons on the device, so they're nicely domed and well separated, really easy to navigate around without sight or partially sighted. We don't double up on button functions either. So there's a separate power button, there's a separate volume button. And if the user wants to use a torch, there's a separate torch button. You don't have to go searching around in menus for it. All of our fonts are nice and large. We try and always achieve a minimum font size equivalent to a 14, and if we can get up to 16, depends on the screen that we're using and the technology that we've got at the time. And then of course we concentrate very heavily on sound. Sound's an interesting one. A lot of older people lose high frequency. When you lose some high frequency, telephone calls become particularly difficult. Sounds that are softer often disappear in a conversation for somebody who's losing a bit of high frequency. So we need to tweak that sound, make it louder, but shape it so it sounds better for somebody with some hearing loss. And yeah, obviously then also have hearing aid compatibility, and all of our devices have great sound, and all of our devices have hearing aid compatibility as well. So it's larger simplification of menu systems, simplification of operation, but making things really easy and accessible to navigate, and therefore there's less resistance in people using the product and more enjoyment.
So those are your design principles. Just talk us through the product range then, Chris.
So we have home phones, which are a lovely large button, really nice big font on the buttons and easy to navigate, and obviously amplified. We have bar style phones, so candy bar is the term that's often used, and they're nice large buttons, well separated keys, and we do those in various different technologies, so 2G and 4G devices, so that they are ready for the next generation of connectivity. And then clamshell phones, which are often the preferred format, because of course when you close a clamshell it can end the call, or when you open the clamshell it can start the call.
I always find that really satisfying, Chris, do you not think, when you snap the phone shut and the call ends?
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of people would say, beam me up, Scotty, when they're using a clamshell. But, you know, maybe it harks back to those times. But no, it's just beautifully usable. And it's nice to know that you're not pocket dialing when the thing's closed in your pocket or in your handbag. And then, of course, we have a range of smartphones. So our smartphones start from a 5-inch device, and then we move up to a larger 5.5-inch. And there we really concentrate heavily on usability. We ship every device that we have in our range with a very good instruction book. But when we get to smartphones, smart technology can often be quite confusing. And you don't need an instruction book about the product necessarily. You need a guide to how you can use that product and get the most out of the product. So we ship a training book. It's just over 100 pages. That covers everything from how to use WhatsApp and set up user groups, and why you need a SIM card, and why you need data when you're out and about, and all the things that younger generation take for granted. But actually, when you're a bit older, you might worry about these things, or the terminology is not quite so natural. So we put it all into this very lovely book, ship it with the product, so you've got something that you can go through practical day-to-day tasks with and try things out without any fear. You can learn at your own pace, so you don't feel foolish if you forget something, or you don't have to ask questions that you might feel are silly, because you've got this lovely book to carry on with. And then we're also now developing that in an application form for our smartphones and tablet called the Emporia Coach. And we break the training into 30 little tasks, so one each day, send a reminder to the device each day through the info center, which I'll also explain in a minute. And we're able then to encourage use and encourage people to try different things out. And the great thing about using an application in this way is that we can change things and adapt things as we go forward. So potentially we could even work with the RNIB and develop a coach in a specific direction for partially sighted users.
Let's talk about the Talk Active, which is a really straightforward clamshell phone, and this has been developed in partnership with RNIB to really provide a simple, easy to use phone for blind and partially sighted people.
So as you said at the beginning, not everybody can get on with touch screen, and actually it's not always about software. It's very much sometimes a very physical thing that you need to have in your hand, you know. And if you've not got used to touchscreen technology earlier in your life with screen readers and that kind of technology that's been developed, then as you're older, you're unlikely to, and actually communication needs to be simple and quick. So the first product that we worked on is the Talk Active, The Talk Active, every button speaks, tells you what it is and what it's doing. It'll, of course, read incoming text messages. It will announce the call that comes in as well. So if you've got the number in the phone book, it will tell you the name of the person that's calling you. It's got a lovely feature that when the device is closed, you can press the volume button on the side and it will speak the time and tell you how much battery life you've got in the product as well. So we worked with the R&B team to make it really accessible. It's got a lovely, wide, nice keypad. Most people find the five key very easy, but of course, if you needed an additional dot, that's something that can be easily added to this clamshell phone because obviously it folds and it can take that dot inside. But yeah, very, very simple, very straightforward, very naturally sounding voice as well. I'll just give you an indication now if that's okay.
9:47. Battery level 100%.
Hopefully you heard that.
Definitely, yeah. Really clear female voice. It's sort of like the kind of the Androidy voice that you hear sometimes from Google.
It's a Google voice. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we've used. So the natural language speaking that Google have developed is just astonishing. So why try and reinvent the wheel when there's one that's also there and easy to use?
And that's going to cut through in a noisy environment as well. If you're out and about in a shop or on the street, that voice is going to kind of cut through in that sort of environment as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I've got some questions about testing, but is there anything else you want to highlight there in terms of, unique selling points on the Talk Active?
Well, I mean, it's a very unique device, actually. As I said, I've worked in this industry for a very, very, very long time, and developing a feature phone that's talking has always been quite a challenge. So as soon as we had a device that we could attach the Google platform to, then for me it was the most natural thing in the world to push out and try and address the need that's there. So because we've used a feature phone, and it's a 4G device, so it's not a dumb phone, it can connect to the latest networks and give you very good connectivity overall and really good voice quality. But having that voice package on top of it is really unique in the way that it can read, and it reads every menu as well. So it works like a screen reader, so anything that's on the screen will be read out and in that natural female voice. And anything coming in will also do that. Before you send a text message, because of course you can type a text message and listen to the characters, you can then play the entire message back before you send it. So there's quite a few comforting features that make it something that is quite a fun thing to use, actually.
To what extent are blind and partially sighted people involved in the testing of products like the Talk Active, Chris?
Ultimately, that's why we work with the RNIB, because you've got guys in your team that are blind and partially sighted, and ultimately, if it doesn't pass what they're requiring and how they feel about a device requirement should be for the audience, then it can't exist. So it's not something that we ever do on our own. We have to study hard. The study of aging and the impact of aging is massive. So we have some basis of understanding of sight loss, but the specifics around certain types of sight loss, like macular degeneration, and where you can learn how to present things in particular fonts so that you get the best possible readability and clarity on the screen, those we have to work with organizations like the RNIB. You're going to teach us better than we can find out ourselves.
Well, we really do appreciate the opportunity and your willingness to take on board feedback and build that in and make design decisions based on those customer needs. Thank you so much, Chris. Before we get kind of contact details and where people can find out more, is there anything I've not sort of asked you that you wanted to sort of mention at this point?
No, not really. I think it's just worth mentioning that our portfolio also now extends to a tablet. So we've got a lovely 10.1-inch tablet, again with lovely large icons, so it's very legible. And we're always developing, so there will be future devices coming down the line. I'm not entirely sure we'll ever go down the route of having a talking smartphone, and the reason for that is there's already some very good software packages out there. And there is also already some really good accessibility features within an Apple device. So I'm not sure that it's something that we will add to our portfolio, but feature phones, absolutely 100%.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time and joining us here on Tech Talk. Of course, a number of the Emporia products are available from RNIB's shop, but if people want to contact you directly or perhaps read a little bit more about Emporia, what's the best way to do that?
Just pop on the website. So the UK website is emporiamobile.com. In fact, that's the group's website, and it'll automatically come to the UK site when you're based here. And there's lots of information. There's an awful lot of product information on there. And then, of course, there is a contact us section as well. We publish lots of different things in our blog area. So there's always something interesting to read on the site too.
Thank you very much, Chris, from Emporia UK and Ireland. And we really appreciate you taking time to chat with us here at Tech Talk. And do stay in touch.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
Chris Millington there from Emporia, and we hope to bring you a demonstration of the Talk Active phone and Emporia tablet here on Tech Talk in the coming weeks.
RNIB's Trawston Broome is along now with another instalment of Jaws Tech Bites. He's going to be telling us all about the Jaws Setting Centre.
Welcome to today's Jaws feature, where I want to introduce the Jaws Setting Center to you. The Jaws Setting Center allows us to change settings in Jaws. For example, when I'm in Microsoft Word and I don't like that Jaws speaks every letter that I'm typing by default, I can change the setting that Jaws only tells me the whole world when I'm pressing the spacebar after typing it in, or I can switch that off, or I can also say that Jaws should read out every character and, after pressing the spacebar, repeating the word to me. How I do this, I'll show you in this little feature. I'm now at the moment in Microsoft Word, and I want to start the Settings Center. Now I'm pressing the Jaws key and the 6 in the num row.
Word-Jaws Settings Center dialog, search box edit, Control plus E.
And now Jaws says to me, Word Setting Center, and it tells me that I'm at the moment focused on a search field. In this search field, I can type in the name of the setting I want to change, or I can also type in a part of the name if I don't know the exact name of the setting I want to change. I don't want to change something using the search field at the moment because I want to explore the settings a little bit more. For that, I press now the Tab key.
Tree view, user closed, 1 of 26.
That brings me now to a tree view where Jaws tells me that I'm focused on user, and this is closed by default. If I go down now in the tree view,
web/html/pdfs closed.
It tells me web/html/pdfs also closed. I don't want to go in here. I want to go back to my user settings, so I press cursor up.
User closed.
Now I'm again on user, and I want to know what can I do in the user settings. And for every setting that you want to change or where your focus is on, you can read a little explanation what this setting will do for you. I press now the Tab key, and to read out the whole text, I press Jaws key and cursor down.
Read only and use the options in this group to control keyboard input and screen feedback. Experienced users may prefer to have keyboard echo off or set to words only, where new users may find it helpful to hear characters spoken while typing. Typing echo and typing interruption are examples of keyboard input. Screen feedback examples are screen echo and progress bar announcement.
That sounds very complicated, and if you really don't know what this explanation means, you have to try it out. And that's also with me the case. Some explanations for settings I really don't understand either, so don't worry about this. I go back now to my tree view, and I want to open the user settings. I press now Shift and Tab.
Tree view, user closed, 1 of 26.
And if I want to open the user settings, I press now cursor right.
User open 10 items.
And in the user settings, I can find 10 items. Now I can press cursor down to go to the first setting that I can change.
Level 1. Progress bar updates announcement 5 second intervals 1 of 10. User.
This means that JAWS reads out the progress bar every 5 seconds. That can be very annoying, for example, if you are copying big folders into another folder. And if JAWS is copying those, it can happen that JAWS reads out 10, 15, 20%, and so on. If you don't like this, you can change this setting to 10 seconds or to 30 seconds, and you can also switch that off. If you want to change a setting in the setting center, you can press F6, and then you can go through the different options by pressing cursor up or cursor down. If you are happy with the setting you have changed, you press F6 again to go back to the tree view. I don't do this with the progress bar, I go once more down in the tree view.
Type in echo characters.
Here is the setting I want to change. To know what that means, I can press now the Tab key and JAWS and cursor down to read out the explanation.
Read only, I use the radio buttons in this group to determine how much feedback is received when typing and pressing keys. You may choose either characters, words, both characters and words, or none so that JAWS remains silent as you type. Character echo is the default. You can toggle typing echo settings by pressing insert plus 2. This allows you to cycle through the different options without using settings center.
We want to change this for Microsoft Word. I go now back to the tree view by pressing Shift and Tab.
Tree view, typing echo characters, 2 of 10.
Now I press F6 to go to the options.
User page, typing echo characters, radio button checked, 2 of 4, Alt plus E.
If I press now cursor down.
Typing echo words, radio button checked, 3 of 4, Alt plus E.
I have checked that only words should be spoken by JAWS in Microsoft Word. Because I'm happy with this setting and I want to explain the rest of the setting center to you, I press now F6 to go back to the tree view.
Tree view, typing echo words, 2 of 10.
Now we are back in our tree view and we know if you're pressing the Tab key, then we are on the explanation field.
Read only, edit. Use the radio buttons in this group to determine how much feedback is...
Okay, that's what we know. But if we press the Tab key again, it will bring us to this.
Okay button.
So if we want to change our settings, we can use this button to save them. If we are placed in the tree view, we can also press the Enter key without going to the Okay button if we want to save our settings. If I press the Tab key again, it will bring me to an
cancel button.
And if we press enter on this, it will bring us back to Microsoft Word. We can also use escape to leave the setting center if we don't want to go to the cancel button. If I press Tab again,
application colon combo box word 199 of 214,
it will bring us to the list of different applications. So, if we, for example, decide that we want to make settings for other applications, we can also go to this list and navigate it by cursor up or down and also using first letter navigation. I tap again.
Search box edit, control plus E.
And here we are on the search field where from we started our whole journey through the settings center. Because I've made settings that I want to save, I go back to the tree view.
Tree view, typing echo words, 2 of 10.
And then I press enter to save my settings. I can also tap to the OK button, but I don't want to do that at the moment.
Enter, document 1-word, edit.
If you want to start the settings center and change default settings, you can start an application like Microsoft Word. Then you press JAWS key and the 6 in the num row to start the settings center.
Word-JAWS settings center dialog, search box edit, control plus E.
And from here you can press the key combination control shift and D to load the default settings so that every setting that you are changing in the settings center affects all applications immediately.
JAWS settings center dash default left paren all applications right paren.
And here you can explore the settings center the same way as I did in Word before. And also change your settings.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. This is Tech Talk and I'm Dave Williams. There are no shortage of ways to pay, it seems, these days. You can, of course, use cash, your debit or credit card, or maybe even Apple or Google Pay. There are, of course, pros and cons to all of these approaches. And here to help us identify the pitfalls is Colin Shales from RNIB's Technology for Life team. Welcome back, Colin, to Tech Talk. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me back.
A few years ago, I remember you telling me, I think you were probably one of the first people in Worcester to go into a well-known American fast food outlet, and you tried to use Apple Pay on the week of launch, and it didn't go entirely to plan, did it?
No, it didn't. This is going back to 2015, when Apple Pay was first launched in the UK through your iPhone or your watch. And yes, it was in said restaurant trying to pay for my transaction and asking, could I use Apple Pay? And the response from the guy was, no, sir, we only sell Apple Pie. I'm just trying to find out if I can pay for my food using the new contactless system. And he said, no, sir, we only do Apple Pies. So after speaking to a manager, which I really didn't need to escalate the situation, I was just trying to find out, we finally established that we meant Apple Pay and not Apple Pie, although I still ended up walking away with an Apple Pie and apple slices in my order.
Well, they are. Well, nearly 8 years on, awareness of Apple Pay and Google Pay, of course, is now much more widespread. And pretty much anywhere now that you can use a credit or debit card to make a purchase online in an app or even face to face, you can use Apple Pay or Google Pay. Let's call them mobile payments. What is a mobile payment? Why is it different from using your card, Colin?
Yeah, so it takes, you know, the card payments one step further. Essentially, mobile payments are regulated digital transactions that are facilitated through your mobile phone or your Apple Watch, or essentially any device that has the NFC technology. Now, that stands for near field communication, which is the technology that allows for payments to go between your device and the one in the shop, for example. But they are essentially more secure and use encryption, so a lot more safer than using a standard debit card or cash. And can, like you said, can be used for a few different things, tap to pay in the shop or on websites and apps and peer-to-peer as well. So using apps like PayPal in conjunction with your Apple Pay to pay a friend for a restaurant bill or maybe a charity event or something like that. So it can do all of those host of things.
So you have essentially a digital copy of your debit card stored on your device, whether that's a watch or a smartphone or some other device. Why do you think this is particularly beneficial for blind and partially sighted people?
Yes, I mean, there's many reasons why that could be the case. I mean, a few that I can think of is certainly when you're in the queue to purchase, you know, you perhaps feel a little bit rushed to try and make a transaction using your traditional methods of a card or cash. This way, you know, you've got your device in your pocket. You've got accessibility set the way you like it on that device. So why not make the payment from that device too? And it's just a case of pulling that out of your pocket, or maybe you've already got it in your hand, and just tapping that onto the card reader in the shop. So one particular good thing. Maybe not having to feel around for a keypad on the actual kiosk or the card reader as well. So it's just a case of just tapping it on there, not having to interact with the keys in some cases, which aren't accessible and aren't tactile anyway. So that's a couple of methods why that might be more beneficial.
You mentioned accessibility features of your mobile device, and something that I very much appreciate, if I make an Apple Pay payment using my watch, I can read the receipt. It's spoken back to me. The amount is announced by VoiceOver if I so choose. And that for me was a real breakthrough, because all through my life I'd never been able to read a receipt.
No, that's absolutely right. And you know, we usually scrunch them up and put them in our pocket, never to be read again. But to have the notification come through onto your phone screen or your watch straight after the transaction to confirm the amount that you've paid, who it was paid to, and in some cases the specific product, is really good, and it allows you to analyze, you know, what your expenditure and what you spent on is in the future as well. So it's just a more rounded experience. It's brilliant.
For someone completely new to making mobile payments, how do we set it up?
Yeah, so there's essentially two kind of, you've mentioned Google Pay and Apple Pay. They're largely the same experience, both needing kind of signing in. I think the Apple experience is a little bit more ready to go. So the wallet, essentially you're given a digital wallet on both devices. When I say both, I mean iPhones and also Android devices, where you can store your cards. So we need to open those wallet apps in both cases. So I'm speaking for both Google and Apple. We locate the add card option, and you're given two options. You can manually enter your card details, which you do once, or you can use the camera on the back of your device to scan the card when it's flat on the surface, and it will just record those details into the app securely and quickly as well. Now, it's worth noting that your wallet doesn't keep the details of your card. Neither Google or Apple have any access to your personal card information. They use encryption and tokens to make transactions where that isn't led back to you as an individual. So that's where I mentioned it was secure and encrypted. But once you've added your card to the wallet app, it's a case of just launching that app in the Apple case by pressing your home button twice or the side button twice, depending on which model you have. And I think with Android and Google Pay, you simply hold the device once you've unlocked the phone to the card reader, and that transaction will be complete.
And do you need a special bank account to make this work?
Not at all, no. Most major banks now are accepting Apple Pay. So all of the ones that you can think of in the high street especially support Apple Pay, and more are being added worldwide all of the time.
And when you come to make the payment then, how do we prove, you know, how do I prove it's me that's making the payment?
Yes, a security. I mean, making sure that it's actually you and not someone who's stolen your device making a payment is really important. And there's essentially three ways, depending on the model of your phone. We can use the fingerprint sensor to authenticate, you know, your identity. Likewise with face ID as well. And if you have neither of those or no desire to use those, you can put a PIN code in as well, just before you make the payment. That ensures that it's yourself that's using the device. If you have an Apple Watch, you don't actually need to authenticate, because once you've got the watch on your wrist, that's paired with your phone. They know that you're wearing that watch. So if you lose the watch, you won't be able to make payments on it. So there's no kind of fear of having someone then use that to make a payment.
Right, because the watch asks you to put the PIN back in once you take it off your wrist.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Are there any limitations that we need to be aware of?
Well, thinking about this, I struggled to find some. I mean, other than your device's battery has died, also you can, you know, susceptible to losing your device, or it can be stolen, although no payments can be made essentially from a stolen device. But if you're without your device and you don't have your card, that may be a limitation. But not many, no. Mobile payments can actually be made without an internet connection in some instances as well. So even in poor Wi-Fi areas or data areas, encrypted transactions can still be made at kiosks.
And you could, of course, lose your card. That's the other thing.
Well, absolutely. Yeah.
And how much can you spend if you're using Google Pay or Apple Pay? This is one that confuses a lot of people.
Yes, it does. It is. I had to look this one up. It used to be capped. As far as I can tell, Google and Apple don't put a restriction on the amount you can spend. It's the retailers that can cap the amount. So in the majority of places, there are no limits to how much you can spend, although some retailers have said a maximum of £100, for example. So I don't think you're going to find that very often, where you can't make a payment over a certain amount.
Yeah, and I've had it where a retailer's allowed me to do multiple transactions. I remember I didn't have my card with me once and I wanted to buy some groceries and the amount was more than the retailer would allow and they split it across two transactions and I was able to pay that way.
Yeah, I've definitely done that myself, but I think that scenario is probably behind us now, hopefully, in most retailers.
Brilliant. Well, look, Colin, if anyone needs help with setting up mobile payments or they just want to talk with somebody, where can we get more info?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you want to research these yourself, there are two dedicated websites. There's pay.google.com for your Google Pay, and there's apple.com/UK/Apple-Pay. And that's for the Apple payments. Or feel free to contact the Technology for Life team at RNIB by calling 0303 123 9999. And we're happy to, you know, continue conversations about these mobile payment methods.
Colin Shales from RNIB's Technology for Life team, thanks very much.
Cheers, Dave. Thank you.
Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad join me now. Guys, have you had occasion to make a mobile payment using your phone or your smartwatch, Callum?
Yeah, I love it. I use it all the time. It's very rare now that I even take my physical wallet and cards and stuff with me, to be honest, when I'm going out and about, because pretty much everywhere takes Apple Pay now. I think the general rule of thumb is, if they take contactless payments, then they will take things like Apple Pay and Google Pay. I'm not entirely certain of that, so don't quote me on that, but that's what I've heard somewhere. And that seems to be my experience. I've not really come across any places that don't accept it. Weirdly enough, when it first came out, I found it easier on the iPhone than I did on the Apple Watch, because there was a feature, I'm not sure if it was a glitch or if it was by design, but when you double tapped the side button on the watch, VoiceOver's volume would duck to like pretty much a whisper. And I think it was because, as I said, I'm not sure if it was a bug or a privacy feature, because it does tell you which card you're paying off and it does read out the last four digits of your card number. But when you're in a busy shopping centre and your VoiceOver volume goes right down, it made it kind of difficult to use. I used to just get my iPhone out, but that seems to have been...
I think they've solved that now.
Yeah, that seems to be fixed now. So, I've started using it on the Apple Watch lately and it's amazing. Double tap that button, tap your wrist, and off you go, hopefully, all being well.
How about you, Tasneem?
Callum, thanks for that. Sounds like a really good plan. I don't have an Apple Watch yet, but I've given it for a lot of consideration. I have used Apple Pay occasionally. I'm not as fluid with it yet, so I feel like I require a lot more practice. And I guess what gets me is that when I'm pressing the side button, it comes up automatically with the kind of putting your passcode, and I guess being out in public, if I haven't got a pair of earphones with me or whatever, that kind of is a little bit more tricky. But I feel like that for me is not fluid yet, so I need to do a lot more practicing.
Are you not using Face ID?
No, not with that. I haven't actually got it fully set up on this phone.
Yeah, I think there is a setting you can control whether you want to use your... Depending on what device you have, you can use your Touch ID or your Face ID for Apple Pay. So you just tap your fingerprint or do your face. Obviously, the only downside was the typical one of Face ID, where during the pandemic, when everyone was wearing masks, that that didn't work too well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can imagine with a Touch ID, that's a kind of simple process. And I do miss the not having the Touch ID personally on the new phone.
Yeah, I mean, Callum, you've got the watch, so it's almost dangerous, isn't it? Because you can be out and not have a card or anything with you, and then suddenly you find yourself shopping.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I've not got my wife an Apple Watch and put Apple Pay on it, because I just know that. Sorry, yeah. Jess, if you're listening.
Yeah, and that's an important tip as well. I think that if you are paying using Apple Watch, that when you double press that side button, you can then select which card you choose to pay with.
Yes, you can. Yeah, it comes up with the different options. So you can have one card. I've got one card as the default, but then I've also got my company card on there, which I'll use if I'm traveling for work and things like that. I've put that on my Apple Pay as well, but I've made certain that my card is the default. So unless I go in and manually change it, it's not going to accidentally go on my corporate card.
Very good plan.
Of course, Apple Pay is not the only game in town. There's Google Pay as well. And then some of the banks offer their own solution as well. I think you can get a sort of a wristband, a wearable device that will allow you to make contactless payments as well. Are you familiar with any of that?
I've never heard of it, actually, but sounds interesting.
Is it BPay? Did Barclays have a thing going on at one stage?
Yeah, they did. I remember, actually, I've won one of those wristbands in some sort of competition a while ago. I can't remember what it was for now. But yeah, I did have one, but I never used it, unfortunately. I've always just stuck to... I'm already so deep in the Apple ecosystem and I've got all my Apple things with me that I just stuck to Apple Pay. But no, the other solutions, you know, are just as good, I'm sure.
Of course, the beauty of doing a payment on your watch or your phone as a blind or partially sighted person is, of course, you can read that receipt.
Yeah, so with mine, as soon as you scan it, within, I think it depends on, it doesn't need internet, so I think it depends on just how fast the transaction goes through, but usually within a couple of seconds, I've got a little notification from Wallet that says where I've paid and exactly how much it was, so.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I do like that feature.
Yeah.
All right, well, we would love to know about your experiences. How's it going? Have you dabbled in the world of mobile payments? Is it working well, not working well? Are you worried about it? If you've got questions, challenges, problems, do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Tasneem, thanks again. We've had an email come flooding in from David Apps, and thank you so much, David, for contacting us here at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And David was interested in our recent kitchen installation. David wants to know how the company approached accessibility. Were they able to describe what the kitchen would be like? And were Mr. and Mrs. Williams happy with the results? Well, David, how long have you got? Callum and Tasneem, you're with us as well, and feel free to chime in with your questions, but I'll have a stab at this. The most important thing, I think, for us was to go to a few different kitchen showrooms, you know, and touch the different materials and to feel the different kinds of countertop, you know, were we going to have wood or MDF or some sort of stone, and to obviously understand the pros and cons of that, and also to feel the different shapes of the front edge, you know, the profile of the front of the countertop. That was a big part of it. Also, we felt quite a lot of cupboard doors, different types of handle, and of course the same for appliances. We talked with the supplier a lot about lighting and flooring. So that was the sort of the auditioning part in terms of what materials we were going to use in the construction. In terms of the design then, we had a fairly clear idea of what we thought the layout should be. And we invited a number of companies actually to come round and measure up and talk through our choices. And for the most part, they seemed pretty happy with what we suggested. We didn't actually change our layout too much. We moved some appliances around a little bit, and we moved a door across, but they were quite subtle changes. It wasn't clear, obviously, what the overall experience was going to be like. We didn't have a kind of a mock-up of the new kitchen that we were able to experience, and maybe that is something that would be good to have. But overall, yeah, I think we were pretty happy with the results. And I think the thing that we are most happy with is that we've managed to get ourselves more storage, but at the same time make the space feel bigger. So I think we've made better use of the space, but that was really of our own design. We thought, well, if you put a cupboard in this corner and you move this fridge round here, actually you'll make a bit more space in the middle as well. If you get rid of this big chunky table and put in a, you know, a snug little breakfast bar with some stools, that'll make a bit more space as well. And then the other thing is, because we've got a tiny bit of light perception, not really much usable vision, but we just wanted the room to feel a lot brighter, so we upgraded the lighting there at the same time. Callum, Tasneem, what have I missed?
Did you get any sighted assistance when you went to the different showrooms and when you had companies coming around to to check it, or was most of it just the two of you?
Yeah, well, so for the most part, it was the two of us. We did have a couple of different sighted people at various stages just give us their view on things and get them to describe colours, because, of course, you know, when you go into a showroom, the salesperson is going to give you the spiel, right, in terms of how something looks and what, you know, kind of goes together. And, you know, we've got friends, luckily, who've got quite an eye for design. So we did enlist a little bit of sighted assistance with that. But it was really more to kind of confirm our own thinking on the subject. I don't think there was anything really that completely altered as a result of having sighted people involved. Although when we were trying to find stools for the breakfast bar, we did get our sighted friend Sarah to sort of look online and describe the stools to us and give a view on whether or not she thought they would, you know, sort of match with the rest of the colour scheme.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. It's nice to know that you're happy with the results as well. I mean, me and my life at the minute, I mean, this is nothing a lot like the scale that you're doing, but me and my wife are looking at redecorating around the house, you know, just repainting the rooms and maybe some, you know, new worktops and stuff. But I don't have a clue when it comes to the visuals. Luckily, she's sighted, so I'm just kind of letting her make the decisions at the minute. But it's nice to know that, you know, it is doable. I think it's just a confidence thing with me, to be completely honest.
I mean, we live in a modern house, right? This is a fairly new build. It's probably about 15 years old. So we knew that we were looking for a modern, you know, sort of contemporary kitchen, that both of us were quite keen on, you know, sort of clean lines and lots of light in the space. And we certainly needed more storage in a practical sense. So they were the main requirements that sort of drove it. We were open to suggestions in terms of the actual colors, because of course when it comes to things like paint, you know, there's umpteen different kinds of white, isn't there? You know, you can have magnolia and off-white and cream and all these different things, and that's hard, and some of that you just have to take on trust, I think.
Yeah, I really like the fact that, you know, you're able to get around different showrooms and have a good feel of all the different worktops and things, because I think, you know, as we see through touch, it's so important, isn't it, that actually people's responses to that are kind of, okay, yes, you know, come and have a look at this. And obviously it's not a visual look, it's a tactile look, you know, and that's how we're going to get the most information out of, you know, what type of cupboards it is and whether you like the style of it or not and how smooth the surfaces are and all of that sort of thing. So I think it's really great that actually you had that opportunity to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I hope that's in some way useful, David. Let us know what you think. If you're doing any home improvements, maybe you're just looking for a new carpet or, you know, paintwork or something like that. And, you know, can technology, you know, help us with that? Because, of course, you know, these designers are using software, which for us was completely inaccessible. You know, we couldn't look at the plans on the salesperson's computer. You know, we just had to go with an audio description really of that and try and enlist the help of friends. But have you found an innovative way of using technology to support your home improvements? We'd be keen to hear about that. Callum, Tasneem, thanks a lot. Dolphin, or Dolphin Computer Access, a name known to many people in the UK as a producer of assistive technology. Many of you, of course, will be accessing RNIB Talking Books using the Easy Reader app available for iPhone and Android phones, and also on the desktop, I think, as well. Dolphin, known for Guide Connect, a simplified interface to allow the less tech savvy to get online, and of course Supernova, which offers magnification, speech and braille. Now, 2022 was a busy year for Dolphin. The company chairman, Noel Duffy, of course, received a Lifetime Achievement Award from RNIB for his contribution. The company joined the Kiosk Association in an effort to make kiosks more accessible. And, of course, Easy Reader Premium was launched, offering synchronization and access to Google Classrooms. Joining us now from Dolphin is Jane Brassington. Hello, Jane. Welcome to RNIB Connect Radio. Good to have you with us. It's a busy time for you guys.
It is. Hello, Dave. Thanks for having me today. Yeah, it's always busy, I think, in the world of software. Things are always changing. So we're always keeping up with what's coming out from Microsoft. So yeah, it's a good place to be.
And so did I miss anything there in the introduction? I was sort of trying to cover off what's sort of happening in the world of Dolphin at the moment. Is there anything major that I've missed there?
No, I was very impressed. I was taking notes. I was very impressed. No, it's good. I think the only thing that maybe you didn't mention yet is that, because we haven't announced it yet, is we're expecting a new upgrade to Supernova version 22 at the end of this month. So we'll be... We'll talk about that a bit later, yeah.
We will, absolutely. All right, Jane, so I know you of old. I mean, I need to declare a bit of an interest here because up until about 10 years ago, can you believe it's been nearly that long? I actually used to work with Dolphin, and it was the reason I moved to Worcester back in 2006 and had a really good run at Dolphin, really enjoyed my time there and massive impact on my life. I've been using Dolphin software since I was a kid. Yeah. Just sort of share for everyone who doesn't know you, Jane, what's your role at Dolphin?
Gosh, so I've been at Dolphin even longer, coming up 27 years now, but my role has always been with the overseas sales and overseas distributors. So I work with our partners, mostly in Europe, but also we've got distributors in Australia and New Zealand and further afield. So that's my role. A lot of it is commercial problem solving and a bit of training as well, and also bringing back the features that people request in other markets and the needs that they have, and bringing that to the product team and making sure that we're solving those problems as they come up. So yeah, it's really varied, really interesting, and I work with some really nice people, as you well know. So it's a good team.
Now, most operating systems these days do have a basic level of accessibility built in. So if you buy a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop, right out of the box, you know, there is some basic screen reading in there and some basic magnification. Why do you think it's important that we as blind and partially sighted people should really upgrade and actually look at third-party solutions like those available from Dolphin?
That's a really good point. There is some really good stuff available. And I think one of the key reasons is that there needs to be innovation and there needs to be a little bit of competition in order to get the best for the customers, for the end users, and also to meet those day-to-day needs that I was talking about, which may differ in different markets and may differ for different experiences. I think it's really good that there's some native accessibility has been taken seriously by Apple and by Microsoft and by Google. There's some good stuff happening, but at the end of the day, they aren't driven by accessibility. They do it because it's the right thing to do, but it's not their key focus. Whereas obviously with ourselves and with the other manufacturers in this market, we're really driven by getting the best for our customers and our users and by our, you know, our colleagues as well who use the software. So it's really that focus, I think, that sets us apart. And also, you know, with the best will in the world, Apple and Microsoft, they're developing for the majority, whereas we can maybe focus on more specific needs. So I think, for example, with let's take the Windows magnifier, which gives a really decent basic access. But if you start to use, you know, multiple applications, or maybe an HD screen, or maybe you're zooming into a higher level, you start to get that loss of tracking, you start to get that pixelation, and you're going to come across a fair few things that are going to frustrate you in your daily work or your daily tasks. And those are the things, those are the frustrations that we try and iron out with the product that we develop. So, yeah.
Okay, so that built-in accessibility, it's kind of a gateway drug. It might get you started, but actually when you want to have perhaps a more productive experience, maybe your requirements, outgrow the built-in accessibility. For me, it is about productivity, I think. Actually, the reason I use third-party solutions is so that I can be more efficient when I'm doing my work. I've got keystrokes to get me specific pieces of information that might not form part of the core accessibility. You mentioned magnification there, Jane, and you've got this new release coming up. So let's talk about Dolphin's magnification options. What's available and what makes it sort of stand out from whatever else might be out there?
Yeah, so I think if you've got some sight, and obviously a lot of people have some usable sight still, the first thing you'll probably notice is the true fonts. So that's the smooth text. So when you zoom in on something, the text will get pixelated, and the Dolphin software will smooth that out. So we've got the true fonts that you can have in Office applications and in the Windows desktop and File Explorer. And that gives you a nice, bold and sharp contrast to the text that makes it easier to read and clearer. And that's something that you don't necessarily get in the Windows magnifier, the native magnifier. And in other magnifiers, we have noticed some loss of performance if you turn on those features, and they seem to come and go a bit. So we're really proud of our true fonts. And in the new release that's coming out at the end of this month, we're extending that service into Office 365 as well as Office 2019 and 2016. So we're improving that and extending that. And we've also recently added the option to make those fonts bold or sharp to increase sort of clarity and contrast. So that's a thing that we're really proud of. And also the fact that you can use that, you know, on a standard spec machine. You don't have to have, additional RAM or a special graphics card. So that's one thing we're really proud of.
And that's going to work on Windows laptops and desktops, presumably.
Yeah, Windows laptops. Yeah, and we also have a lot of customers now, especially in education, using Windows tablets. So making use of that rear camera on the back of the tablet to do scanning and to zoom in on paper documents and stuff. So in combination with the Windows tablets as well, it's a really nice tool.
So just on the true fonts there, Jane, I mean, I think a good an analogy for that is it's like the difference between enlarging something with a photocopier or printing it out with a larger font.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. Yeah, definitely that. Yeah. And we do sometimes get, I know some of my colleagues that have a visual impairment say, well, this is a sighted feature. And some people with visual impairment wouldn't necessarily notice a difference. But there are a lot of people do. So everyone has a very different experience. We have a lot of users that have need high levels of zoom, and we equally have users that have just need a low level of zoom. So we're trying to cater for everybody, and I think that's one of the difficulties of our industry. And it's also one of the strengths of the product. There's lots of different options, so you can find something that suits your own site.
Excellent. So that's the big kind of development then for you guys at the end of the month, is this increasing the coverage. So the areas in Windows and in Office 365 where that true font capability is available.
Yeah, that's right. So obviously we've got some other things going on for users of speech and braille as well. But if we're focusing on the magnification, that's the key message for that one. I did mention obviously the use with a tablet increasing in education, and actually that touchscreen experience is really important to the Dolphin experience too. The fact that you can really use a Windows tablet with just one finger, you can scroll around, you can tap and click on things. You don't have to use both hands to use your tablet in magnification mode. And that carries through then to the kiosk experience that you and I were talking about recently. So making kiosks accessible to people with low vision, as well as those people who are blind and use a screen reader. So again, just making it more widely available to more people.
So what would you say to somebody who maybe they're, you know, using Windows Magnifier or they're using another magnification package on Windows? Why is it worth their while perhaps giving Dolphin another look?
Well, first of all, it costs nothing to try. So we've got a 30-day demo that you can get the full experience for. So there's no risk to you. Just give it a go and you can get that from our website. I think you will find that the performance and the reliability and the smoothness of the screen display should be noticeably better. And we like to think that it's, you know, it's nice and easy to use, especially if you're a touchscreen user, you'll notice a huge difference. The other thing is just that connectivity with other devices. So we can work with any document camera or USB camera. Basically, if you can use your camera with Skype, you can use it with Dolphin. And it just enables you to get a really good value option for scanning documents and reading reading printed text. And also just for using it for close-up work, if there's something you want to do, you can actually turn your laptop or your tablet into a very simple video magnifier. And obviously it doesn't have the high definition of the professional video magnifiers, but you know, as a quick fix or a budget fix, it's really worth looking into.
Now, I remember back in the day, one of the issues that screen magnifiers and screen readers faced was playing catch up with the operating system. You know, that Microsoft or whoever would put out an update and then everybody would sort of be scrambling to try and support that. And you sort of alluded to it recently there about Office 365, that now you're going to be supporting that with TrueFonts. How do you keep across that and stay current? Because it feels to me like updates have increased in frequency. Windows seems to update every 5 minutes.
That's right. Well, they've moved to a sort of rolling updates model. So it is a constant battle. And I think that's the same for anybody in this industry. And again, that's the reason why actually, you know, supporting your accessibility developers is quite important, because, you know, there's been a lot of changes in the way that Microsoft Office provide information to accessibility developers. And we've had to wait for them to get it right before we can then deliver it to the customers, because, you know, everybody's software is buggy, including Microsoft, and so we have had to wait for some fixes before we can pass those on to the customer. So, you know, we're there, we're in constant contact with them. We have our technology director has annual visits to Redmond to make sure we're on track, and that is just a reality of our industry, that we are following Microsoft and we all have to keep up, not just Dolphin but the other manufacturers too.
All right. And well, the thing I appreciate about a Dolphin is that you're, you know, just at the end of the phone, and actually you're usually only kind of one person removed from the person who actually creates the software. So it's not like there's lots of layers and sort of systems between you and your customers. You're very close to your customers. And that's something I've always appreciated about Dolphin. So if anybody wants to try the new version, or they just want to learn a little bit more, what's the best way to do that, Jane?
Okay, so we have, a free 30-day demo on our website. So if you go to yourdolphin.com, that's Y-O-U-R, DOLPHIN.com, and you should fairly easily find the products linked to Supernova, and shortly down that page you'll find an invitation to download a 30-day trial. So give it a go. And then we've got lots of free resources for training on the website. So we've got a new learning zone that's got free resources and training and tutorials, and you'll also find obviously help in the product itself. So under the help menu in the control panel, you'll find lots of information there. So, and of course, our wonderful technical support team are just a phone call away. So we're very proud of them too.
Jane Braston from Dolphin, thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Dave. Take care.
We come again to the end of another Tech Talk. Thanks so much for your company. We very much appreciate that. And don't forget, of course, this is your program. We're keen to hear your voice. So if you'd like to send us a recording or a good old-fashioned email, you can do that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. From myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman, Tasni Marshad, until next time.
Bye for now.
See you soon.
Goodbye.